When you see ads for beer on TV, in stores, wherever, they usually show pictures of guys having a good time with their cold, frosty brews. Women are there sometimes, but certainly not in numbers comparable to the male presence. So, chicken and egg, does beer not market to women because women don't drink beer? Or does that phrase work in the other direction? Whatever the old calculations, our next guest wants to install a new math for women and beer. Ginger Johnson is the founder of an organization called Women Enjoying Beer and is the author of a book, How to Market Beer to Women, subtitled Don't Sell Me a Pink Hammer. As you heard in a previous segment on First Friday, she'll have a book launch event tonight at the Schneider Museum on the Southern Oregon University campus. Ginger Johnson, thanks for joining us.
Jeff, it's great to be here. Thanks.
So for the people who don't know of your efforts, what is Women Enjoying Beer? How did that
sure.
get started?
Great question, and I get that a lot. Women Enjoying Beer is the only planet on the company, or excuse me, the company on the planet, there it is, that studies women and their relationship with beer. So we do qualitative research, finding out the why that drives our decision-making, Jeffrey. So it's really, it's marketing overall, but I've chosen this specialty because just what you opened with. It seems on the surface and the images and everything we see and hear, it seems to be very male-centered, male-focused. It's absolutely untrue. And so busting the myths and stereotypes is not only is slightly frustrating once in a while because it keeps happening. At the same time, we can make progress when we look at those things, explode them, and say, you know what? Beer is about flavor, and everybody has taste buds. Everybody has the opportunity. Everybody wants the education. So that's what I choose to focus on. I choose the positive. It's the company that studies then the world's largest population and the world's most dominant market share for buying in America, for
women
sure.
Make the purchasing
oh,
decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. And that seems to be relatively, if you average it out on a global scale, Jeffrey, it is true almost in all countries where females make the final decision choices. It doesn't mean necessarily buying everything physically. I'm not just handing you the cash, but I'm the predominant influencer in those purchases. You look in the grocery store, right? Who do you see as a majority population? With easy identification, you can generally see that they are females. Now, this isn't a chest pounding. This isn't a women are great and we should, because it is the fact that education and opportunity drives us all forward. Beer has an enormous opportunity and perhaps even deficit of opportunity to go ahead and talk to these people who are making the most buying, the most powerful influencing factor is their decision factor, which goes into their wallet and therefore into the beer companies.
So, I mean, was this spurred by your own interest in beer or by an opportunity to make some money or a combination thereof?
Oh, gosh. Come on, Jeffrey. It's like radio. You don't... Did you go into radio for the big dollars? I mean, come on. This is a beautiful plush office here on the fifth floor. Right. Okay. We just answered that question. That's a good question. The company started because literally I looked around one day. I was living in central Iowa. I looked around one day and I thought, why aren't there more women enjoying beer? What is that about? And that has been the question that has been the cerebral itch that I have scratched for 8 years. And I launched the company effectively by presenting a pitch and being selected for the Craft Brewers Conference in 2009 in Boston. And I gave a talk called, What About the Other 50% Developing and Serving the Female Beer Drinker? And that effectively launched the company. So after that point, and even before that point to prep, I did some intensive focus group work. I'd never done it before in my life. As you know, as a good host, you ask a lot of questions, and that drives progress. That's fascinating. That's interesting. I learned quickly to do a couple things as a researcher. To keep your mouth shut when somebody's talking. It's not about what you think or that you want to argue. It's what they think, and you have to let that flow to keep a poker face. Because, again, what you think isn't important, and you have to let people feel comfortable to say what they really want to say or what you're really asking them. And then that there was a whole flood of people, a population in its entirety, who really wanted to talk about this. That blew my mind. It was very exciting. I knew I was onto something, and off I went.
So tell us the Pink Hammer story, because the book How to Market Beer to Women is subtitled Don't Sell Me a Pink Hammer.
It is, and I'd give a nod to my editor, Julie, because she loved the Pink Hammer story. In my 20s, I was in the hardware industry, and I noticed a disturbing pattern that we would get a shipment of pink tools that were supposed to be sold for women, to women, whatever, as gifts in the holiday season. And I just found it so patronizing. And really, at that time, Jeffrey, it hit me that I was insulted, but it didn't hit me that there was a bigger message going on, that this was a pandering, that this was gender inequity kind of, you know, in a tangible form. So I just thought, what is that all about? And so the more I got into this, and really women enjoying beer, it didn't start out as a gender equity issue for me. It really started out as like, I think beer's great. I want to get more people into this. I want to find out why they're embracing it and why they're not embracing it. What is that? So the Pink Hammer came from that story. I talk about it in my TED Talk, as you know, too. So it's just an interesting story because it's a very visual story of how gender disparity is manifested sometimes. Doesn't have to be. You were telling me when we came in here, you've got a beautiful hammer. It happens to be pink.
I almost brought it in.
And if that's the case, then that's great. But it's like I say in my TED Talk, you know, don't sell me something that's crappy because I'm a woman and it's pink and expect me to like it, because that's not going to work.
All right. We're talking to Ginger Johnson about her job, her business in marketing beer to women. Her book is called How to Market Beer to Women, subtitled Don't Sell Me a Pink Hammer. And we'd love to hear from you. Women, have you had feelings about being patronized by advertisers or suppliers? Or, you know, have you had run into the pink hammer situation yourself? Give us your story. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. What has tended to be the approach up till now? I mean, I've seen, you know, the lemon-flavored beers and the raspberry-flavored beers and stuff, which I think have been marketed to women. Has that been a lot of the thrust of what the beer industry has done to respond to the idea of women enjoying beer?
You know, somewhere along the way, Jeffrey, people got this idea that women gravitate particularly towards sweet for beer. I have no idea where that came from. My only can extrapolate that when this country hit prohibition and all the alcohol went underground, so to speak, then we developed a taste for spirits. And to cut the spirits, which were sometimes extremely dangerous and extremely high octane, we mixed them with very sweet syrups and mixes and so forth. So we came out of prohibition with a taste for sweeter, but women have always been involved in beer. I mean, and this is true today. Females are predominant brewers in different countries. They still drive it. They were driven out of beer in the Industrial Revolution, Scientific Revolution, when there was a lot of witch trials and the church took over beer, taking it from home-based craft into a commercial entity. So there's a whole bunch of great stories back there. So yes, for some reason, somebody thought that, oh, well, women must like this kind of beer or that kind of beer, which is as ludicrous as me and you going out, Jeffrey, and saying, hey, you're a man, you're going to drink a porter and you're going to like it. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Okay, yeah, I see the point now. Mm-hmm. However you identify somebody and say, well, this is what you'll probably like,
right,
because you're a...
Right.
Whatever.
Right. Right. I have a friend in New York. He's an editor of a publication. He happens to be, his sexual orientation happens to be gay. I don't even think about that when I talk with Chris. It doesn't matter. But he's seen some stuff that's even targeted that way. I'm like, wow, why are we doing this? It's not only insulting and ridiculous, but you just have to back up and think, why would somebody think that because of the way that we think and go forth in the world, that our taste buds are impacted by our politics? It just blows my mind.
Okay, marketing demographics aside, you do write in the book of wanting to destigmatize alcohol. Is there still sort of a prohibition stigma there?
There is. There is still a very active organization and plenty of people in the country who would like to prohibit alcohol manufacture and sale again in the country. I can't speak in depth to that. That's not what I study. I do know, though, it is very active. They have a lot of dollars. They have a lot of influence. And so it makes me nervous anytime there's something to the extreme. From my perspective, that seems to be an interesting vantage point, because it would be extremely, I mean, it didn't work the first time, right? It was a miserable experiment. And really, America has some of the safest alcohol in the world because we do regulate it. Is the system perfect? Not by a long shot. There's not just three tiers. There's multiple tiers at the same time. We can buy alcohol and rest assured that it is safe. Now, I'm not talking about overconsumption, getting drunk, drinking, you know, alcohol poisoning for overconsumption. What I'm talking about, though, is we can go to the liquor store, the beer store, whatever it is, we can buy that and we can know that it is safe because we have regulation.
Could this book have been a lot shorter? Could you have written How to Market Beer to Women, like, just like you do for men, dummies?
Yeah, right, exactly. One-page white paper. It could have been 1,000 pages. The hardest part for this book, Jeffrey, was to pick the 10 core questions, which made the 10 core chapters, because I've done 8 years of research. I've asked dozens and dozens of questions. And so figuring out how to tell a congruous story with something people can use with only 10 questions was very difficult for me. You could tell me to pick my favorite husband and that would be easy. I've only got one. But don't tell me to pick just 10 things or 5 things or, you know, my album for the desert island kind of thing. At the end of each chapter, I wanted this to be a how-to book, and it is. At the end of each chapter, there are 5 specific tactics for people. This is a guidebook, Jeffrey. It's not. I didn't write this because I wanted to write a book. I have no romantic visions on that. This is a lot of work.
But it's for beer companies and beer marketers?
It's primarily for 2 audiences. It's just a thank you for all the women who have chimed in over the year. Thousands of women across the country, so a big hearty thank you. The primary change makers will be the people involved in beer. The brewers, distributors, importers, retailers, bars, restaurants, hospitality, anybody who has a stake in beer in their livelihood has something to gain by doing this. And nobody has done it before, which continues to blow my mind.
Ginger Johnson, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is How to Market Beer to Women, subtitled Don't Sell Me a Pink Hammer. Ginger is the proprietor of the company Women Enjoying Beer, WEB for short, if you like. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Your experiences, perhaps, particularly from women. Tell us about the things you've run into over the years, people marketing things to you because perhaps they were deemed to be cute or something that was good for the little lady or something.
I feel nauseous all of a sudden.
I know. Let's get the blood pressure going here. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So you just acknowledged the 8 years of doing this, talking to a lot of women, and I gather the responses range from, oh, thank God, somebody mm-hmm. brought this up, I'm tired of people thrusting raspberry beers at me, to,
right.
What are you doing?
Oh, yes. You're absolutely right. I get a lot of, there's a need for this. There's a call for this. What is this all about?
Why do we need to talk about women?
Yeah, exactly. And the cool thing is that when those questions come, that's generally from somebody who is enlightened like yourself. Like, well, of course, beer is for everybody. That's not the majority of thinking, though. So I have heard it all. I've heard a lot of amens and hallelujahs. And I'm, you know, finally, somebody frankly gives a damn that I matter and that I have dollars. I have the buying power. I have the smarts. You know, let's look at it from the brain and taste bud perspective, not from the gender perspective.
Is there really any surprise, though, that there is this sort of gender division? Because there are other places in which we think that the things that people consume are different. Guys get burgers, women get salads, that sort of thing.
Oh, those are lovely, too, right? let's just throw the bath and the baby out because we need to start over with a lot of things. So yeah, absolutely. It's everywhere. It's pervasive. We really need to just stop and think once in a while. I love turning on the light bulb, Jeffrey. And again, this book is designed to share that on a greater scope because when you can turn the light bulb on, you're like, oh, I never thought about women in beer. And what I find happens is that as soon as you start talking about that in the greater context of what we're talking about of life in general, I mean, this is a really big think. People are like, oh, well, then what about this? And what about that? And it's so exciting because you can just see the smoke coming out of their ears because they've engaged and they're rethinking things. That's what gets me up in the morning because I won't lie to you. This has been frustrating in a lot of ways. A lot of people aren't ready for this. They don't think it matters. They don't think that there's a quote issue. They don't think there's a quote problem. There's a huge problem. And so I get up in the morning thinking, okay, I need to find the people who are receptive to this, who can ripple out. And that's why I continue to hold seminars and workshops. I got a seminar coming up next week in Medford. I've got the party tonight for any, and it's open to anybody, whether you know me already or not. Come on out. Schneider's great friend, super supportive. We're going to have some fresh beer.
surprise.
And yeah, exactly, right? So it's for everybody. And when we all just at least think about it, that's what I'm asking, because then that engages some different gears and we make progress in all kinds of ways, just like you're referencing, you know, the hamburger salad, the wine, the beer, the car, the convertible, you know, whatever it is. They're all ridiculous, but we can change them all just one question at a time.
So is beer essentially then your way of getting people to think differently about genders in general? I mean, you like beer, obviously, but I mean, is this your way to address one corner of a much larger set of issues?
It has turned out that way. The first year and a half, it really was the innocent pursuit of why don't more women enjoy beer? Really, what's going on? Come on, let's go, people. And then about a year and a half into it, I was feeling kind of chafy, and I'm like, what is this itch that I can't scratch? And I realized, like, oh my gosh, I'm onto something that has a way bigger implication. So I drive it with the women in beer. And then when people like yourself start asking questions like, oh, wait a minute, there's something else going on here. I'm like, yeah, there's a whole bunch of something else's. So that's exciting. And if we can change and we can make progress with something as simple and global as talking about beer and talking about women, two very universal things, then we can change the world.
Do you have you run across a number of women who said, you know, I never thought of drinking beer. It just wasn't what women did in my family or in my social circle.
Yeah. One of my favorite questions in research, Jeffrey, has been, what's your earliest beer memory? And that really conjures up usually something very positive for people. Because I'm not asking your earliest consumption memory. That conjures up different reactions.
Yeah.
Oh, there was that keg. But when we talk about our earliest beer memory, there's a lot of familial and grandparent references and a lot of really fuzzy, you know, Perry Como kind of feelings of, oh, yeah. And if we can go back to that and start the conversation from a very positive place, then we can, again, make better progress faster.
Let's take a call here. We have Alex in Medford on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ginger Johnson, the author of How to Market Beer to Women.
Hey, I just had a quick comment. When I was overseas in England, I was informed that it was considered tactless for women to order an entire pint of beer. So most women would order two half pints and end up paying more money.
Oh, goodness. And that was just because it was just a cultural construct?
Yes, it was considered gauche for women to order an entire pint in the smaller villages that I was visiting.
And it used to be that those kinds of places, Alex, would have female entrances and male entrances. And she's right. Gauche is the right word. It was appalling or shocking if a woman wanted a beer. And again, who knows where that came from, especially since women have always made beer. We're uphill from that, which is completely ridiculous.
Have you found a fair number of circumstances where you're kind of fighting over bad experiences, where somebody had a kegger in college and they never wanted to go near beer again?
Yeah, that's usually one of the first hurdles. People say, I don't like beer. If I had a buck for everybody who told me that, Jeff, I could take us to, you know, Belgium for a month and we could have all the beer we wanted. So we are fighting that. And it's kind of the analogy I write. If we peg something on, oh, I don't like beer because I had a beer years ago and I didn't like it, you would never hear somebody say that about wine. You would never hear them say, oh, I had a salad once, I'm never going to have a salad again. You don't see a three-year-old never get back on the bike because they fell down. So, again, if we simply break those constructs in our own minds first, we're going to start making lots of progress.
How to Market Beer to Women, Don't Sell Me a Pink Hammer by Ginger Johnson. The book will be in a splash party tonight at the Schneider Museum in Ashland. What time?
Splash, 6 to 8. Come on by. I'd love to see everybody. All ages welcome.
All right. Ginger, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey. Cheers.